was trying to get some lighting up here because this is a Mic'd Up show. It is season 4, where every mortgage has a story. And we are here to talk to people out there, our listeners, who want to come to the ultimate hub. We have hidden stories behind the mortgage industry. We're going to watch them come to life. So I'm Michael Kelleher.
And I'm Michael Zal.
And together in every episode, we both dive deep into the entrepreneurial spirit, the strategic insights, and the breakthrough innovations that built the world's greatest mortgage companies. So if you're advancing your career, scouting for industry leaders, we found them. You're going to hear from them today. And we're also always available to explore opportunities in fintech and prop tech. If that interests you, you're in the right spot. So get ready to unlock the story behind every mortgage. Let's dive in. Our guest today, Cash, and I have gone back quite a while. I've admired always what he's done. He's always willing to take a call, and he's on those calls very blunt about what he thinks about. We often talk mortgage technology, but it could be landscape, could be direction. And I've learned a lot of lessons from him, and I really admire the way he does business. And what stands out to me is one of our past guests, highly recommend you listen to our episode with Stan Middleman. But we both, Michael and I, dove into his book to get an understanding. And I couldn't believe how he really built his empire from his ability to write scripts, hire people that can read those scripts, refine those scripts, and go out there and sell more than referral partners out there in the field. And it makes you wonder, there's not enough of those in our industry. And it's a hyper-focused world, so you need a great leader. Cash, you are that leader. Do you want to just quickly introduce yourself?
My name is Cash Sagafi. So I got into the mortgage industry in October of 1999. And I work at Liberty Home Mortgage. I guess you could say I own it, I suppose. But I'm a loan officer. I've been a loan officer for 26 years. And the biggest thing I tell people is I'm just a problem solver. Give me a problem and I'll solve it. Like in the building we're in, I've owned this building for 4 years. We still don't know where the hell the water main's at to shut the damn water off to the building because I went to change out one of the toilets and freaking, holy shit, I shouldn't curse. I apologize. I didn't even know how to turn the water off in the building. So I've owned the building for 4 years. We don't know where the main's at. So I said, call the water department and the fire department because the city building department will know where the main's at in case the building's on fire. So as dumb as that sounds, so I solve problems. It's what I do all day long. It's all I do.
You do it with a positive attitude. Listen to you. This has been the worst market in forever. Like it's never lasted this long, right? And I guess optimistically, everything since that's closed, anybody that's bought a home since 2022 is in the money. But when's that day going to come? And yet every day you have this positive outlook. Obviously, people feed on it. Can you just tell us why it's a great day today?
I'll tell you two quick things. One is this market makes 2007 look like a picnic. Like, I mean, this market, man, this is, I've done this 26 years. Naturally, I was born in 1973, not 1927 or 1932. So I didn't experience the Great Depression. So I guess that had to be worse. But outside of that, man, this market is brutal. So to the people right now in my company, I tell them this all the time. I tell the watchers who are in the industry, if you've survived this, I don't know how it gets worse than this in the next 20 years. So, I mean, God bless you. Congratulations. You could withstand anything. So this is tough. So if you're surviving, I think kudos to you. You're doing amazing things. As far as my outlook goes, it's really easy. I was almost murdered June 19th, 1997. I was total random act of violence. When people say, Hush, what happened? Nothing. I was walking back to my car and five people just came up to me and my friend. And one of them stuck a knife in my chest right here, dead center of my chest. And I almost bled to death. So, I mean, I almost died. I'll never forget laying on the dirty floor at BW3 in downtown Cleveland. I passed out because the amount of blood I lost, I passed out from the blood loss, but I was lucky that Metro Hospital is right there. And I got picked up quick and I got to the hospital and they cut me wide open and I survived. So, I mean, that experience, I just got done telling this to a customer before I came on your guys' show. She was telling me she's having a panic attack. She just went into contract yesterday. We haven't even started the loan, for God's sakes. I just sent her the application this morning. And she's like, Hush, I'm having a panic attack. And I told her, I said, listen, this, like, let's ease up our expectations. I went through this whole thing with her of like, this is not the, I mean, it's not cancer. You didn't get diagnosed with cancer, for God's sakes. That's a tragedy. You know, if we run into some bumps and bruises and I get delayed by closing, I miss my closing date or the house doesn't appraise for value, that's not a tragedy. That's an inconvenience. So if something happens that this house falls out, it's an inconvenience. It's not a tragedy. I just went through that story with her 20 minutes ago. I hung up with her at like 1:56 to jump into here. Whatever. So, I mean, so I was almost murdered in 1997. Baseline for everything. So when you tell me, Hesh, this market's horrible. I mean, we've been losing money for 3 years. We've been getting killed. I mean, 3 years ago, I had 300 employees. Today I have 100 employees. 70% of my headcount's gone. We're doing probably $15 million a month in production right now. We're doing $60 million, which there's companies out there that do more than that in a day and a half. I get it, but there's a lot of companies that don't either. And I started the company by myself in November 14. And like I say, I'm just a loan officer. I started by myself in November 14. I built the company up to 300 people. We're a mortgage banker. We underwrite everything in-house. I'm telling you, this is the greatest opportunity in the world too, Michael. I'm so excited right now because so much that I'm reading on LinkedIn, especially when I live on LinkedIn, I read so much, all of these consolidations, you know, Bayview, Watt, Guild Mortgage, and Rocket and Zillow might come together. I love it. I love it because the bigger those companies get, the less user-friendly they become. And when you become a giant, there comes a point when even the owner of the company cannot overcome, you know, their size. And their size begins working against them. So for companies like me that are looking to become the next big thing, this is a huge opportunity. We went from like 400,000 loan officers as an industry 3 years ago down to 100,000 right now. How can you not say this is a huge opportunity for those who have stuck in the game? I love it.
Does it make a difference on location? I mean, real estate's mantra is location, location, location. And so you're out in Ohio. I was just there last weekend. So does it matter as far as, I know volume is going to make a difference. You know, I live in California, so our average loan size, median loan size is probably going to be a lot larger than the ones in Cleveland or Cincinnati. But in units wise, on a nationwide basis, how do we reframe the narrative to say, oh, the market is bad, but yet in lower priced housing, it looks like that there are actually more units being sold. So how do we reframe the narrative to our originators that are out there to just think differently than everybody else?
That's a great question, Michael. At the end of the day, here's the bottom line. Like, I'm here. I got my Brecksville Bees wrestling T-shirt on. Everything I do is associated with sport of wrestling. My friend Lee Kemp. Lee was a three-time world champion. He was on the 1980 Olympic wrestling team, but Jimmy Carter boycotted it. They didn't go that year, whatever. Lee wrestled for a high school with like 9 kids on the team in Northeastern Ohio in the middle of nowhere. Daryl Burley was a national champion. I think he was the only wrestler on the team in college. There are guys, Mark Branch, my friend, he's the head coach of Wyoming Wrestling. We were teammates in college. Mark had an 8-9 record and won the national tournament. What the hell does that have anything to do with mortgages? It has everything to do with mortgages. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where you are market-wise. I'm in Cleveland. Our average loan is $202,000 as a company. We're 202. You give me a purchase of $400,000, I'm freaking running circles in the office. Looks like I won the lottery or something, people think. I mean, I'm like, 400 grand, this is unbelievable. If Michael, somebody called you and said, there's a $400,000 purse in California, say, where the hell is that? That thing doesn't even freaking exist, not even half of that number. But the bottom line is, if you go in and do the right, you execute the tasks, the success-oriented actions that you should be executing on a daily basis, and you stay consistent and you're positive with what you do, I don't care if you're the only wrestler on that wrestling team. If you do the right things and live the right lifestyle, you might win a damn national title. You don't have to wrestle for the number one college in the country and be on this gigantic team with all of this and that and the other. You don't. Go in and do the right things and live the right lifestyle. And I don't care. You could be on the tip of Alaska. That's what's so great about our business. Back in 1999 or 2000, when I first started, I used to drive to people's houses. I remember going to pick up I'd call a customer and say, hey, I got to pick up a pay stub. And they'd say, Hesh, I'll leave it in my mailbox. And I'd drive to their house the next day and the damn pay stub wasn't there. And I couldn't call them in the afternoon because nobody had cell phones. So I'd wait until the evening and I'd call them at 8 o'clock at night. Hey, it's Hesh. I was at your house. Oh, Hesh, I forgot to put the pay stub in. I'll put it in now. And I'm thinking, you freaking on and on and on and on. And I got back to the house the next day. Because today, it's just, hey, shoot me a text with your cell phone. And I'm calling them at 1 in the afternoon. This used to be a job in the evening because everybody worked and they couldn't answer the phone. Today, because of COVID, the greatest damn thing happened. Nobody is working remotely, this, that, the other. I get my job done by 4. When I'm done off of this podcast, my day's done. I'm going to go do the mulch. We got to mulch a couple more places in the building. Like, I might go do some mulch. I'm dead serious. It's like, how can't you find opportunity? I don't care where you live, what market you're in. There's opportunity all over the place.
So to take advantage and build this opportunity, what do you see as some of the stepping stones to grow? Like, can you talk about, I think some people often on our show talk at a really high level, but what's it like hiring your first underwriter or hiring your first processor or hiring your first branch manager or some loan officer that's actually in charge of other loan officers?
I mean, I remember when with Liberty, November 14, I opened the company. I went to fund my first loan. Okay. We had no idea how to fund. We had no idea how to sell a damn loan. We had no idea. Like, my processor was me and my processor, and I worked at a bank previously. So, I mean, it was a bank. To this day, I don't even know if they had a website. They were called Proficio Mortgage. I could barely pronounce them, and God bless them. I worked there. That's wonderful. Customers would say, Hesh, what's your website? I couldn't even spell the name of the place. And I'd be like, don't worry about it. Who needs a website? It's Hesh Sagafi. Just you call me, I got you. And they'd be like, Hesh, what's the company website? I don't get all that technology. I'm a child of the 70s. You don't need it. The truth was, I didn't know what the hell if they had a website. And if they did, I couldn't even spell the name of the deal. I told my buddy when we went through, I was in his fridge. I was like, where the hell did you take us? I can't even pronounce this place. But anyways, so we went to fund our first loan at Liberty. We had no idea about anything. I was like, screw it. Fund the damn thing. I said, the worst thing they do is, like, I don't know what the hell they could do to me. They can't kill me. So that's just what we did. My biggest thing I tell people is this, is eat humble pie. You don't know anything. Humble yourself. Have a servant mentality. And my friends always tell me, Hesh, that's like religious or that's like whatever it is. I've never been to church. The only time I've been to church is weddings and funerals. Everybody has their thing. I've never read the Bible. It's not my thing. I'm sure it's a wonderful book, but servant mentality, help others and know your strengths and know your weaknesses. In the sport of wrestling, I suck on bottom. I'm not good on bottom. I do not want to get on bottom. I got to stay on my feet. I got to wrestle on my feet. I'm good on my feet. I know my strengths. I know my weaknesses. My college coach won 2 Olympic gold medals. He knew his strengths. He knew his weaknesses. He stayed away from his weaknesses. So when you're scaling and building, be humble enough to identify where you are not good and fill that gap. You hire somebody to take care of that for you. And that's how I went from just myself and my loan process. It was just me and my processor. When I opened Liberty, I was at Proficio Mortgage, and I told my processor at the time, I said, listen, I opened up my own place. I got my letter from HUD to do my test cases for FHA. I never told her. I never said what I was doing. I'd keep that on the down low. And then I said, look, you can come with me and be my processor, or you could stay here. I got no problem, but I'm going off on my own. I'm taking this thing out. So that's how I started, with just me and my processor. So if you're like a one-man shop, I was a one-man shop. And you just delegate slow and easy, slow and easy. You stay patient. You stay humble. Delegate out your weaknesses. Attack your strengths. And just have a servant mentality to help other people.
At what point did you decide to say, I'm going from one-man show and I'm going to create my big, hairy, audacious goal. I'm just going to start hiring people. We're going to do more. We're going to be good. And it's going to be awesome. When did you decide to make that decision to go big?
February of 2002. I don't even have to think about your questions. February 2002. My girlfriend and I at that time, we go over to my buddy's house, my friend's house, John. And he was a mortgage broker. He owned a mortgage company. So we go over his house, February of 2002. I'll never forget it. He shows me he's got a car collection in his garage, and he had like two Dodge Vipers. And I remember they got like a Volkswagen of some kind. And the car, it had these shocks that went up and you push a button, the car lowers and it raises. And I was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. And like, I'll never forget. He's like, Hesh, I made $1 million last year. I'll never, it was February of 02. So he's just saying in 01, he made $1 million. And we walked out of there. I told my girlfriend, I said, I love the dude. He's a great guy. But if that dude can make $1 million, I can make $1 million blindfolded. I'm not being disrespectful. I knew I'm going to hit seven figures. I was like, I'm going to like, I got this. And my college wrestling coach, John Smith, he won 6 world titles and 2 Olympic gold medals. His going there was such an impact to me because he always talked about being the best in the world. So like, there's no limits. There's no ceilings. There's not like Guilt Mortgage. They have like 2000 loan officers. I think that's a privately held company. I don't think they're public, right? So, I mean, were they public?
They were public going after private.
Oh, they're going back to private. Okay, fair enough. But Countrywide Home Loans, Angelo Mozzillo started it in 1968 with one other person working out of his freaking bedroom and built it up to 62,000 employees by two. So here, my college wrestling coach won 2 Olympic gold medals. I learned right there that he was a normal dude. He put his pants on the same way. It sounds so cliche that these people, that Dan Gilbert puts his pants on, like, you can't, like, why can't you be Dan Gilbert? Why can't somebody be Rocket Mortgage? Like, tell me why. Like, why can't I be Dan Gilbert someday? Why can't I have 20,000 LOs and do 50? Why can't I? I want to know the reason why. I'm willing to put in the time. I saw a Tom Brady video this morning, and he said, everybody wants to win, but not everybody is willing to make the sacrifices it takes to win, whatever. So outside of that, I'm willing to, if you literally told me right now, Hesh, you got to go shovel manure barehanded, bare feet, and stand in it for the next 10 years to be a billionaire, I'm like, let's go. Tell me where the pile's at. I'm out. Like, let's go. I'll do it. Like, so if I'm willing to make the sacrifices, then why can't I? Like, I don't know. Now, it could be, Hesh, you're not smart enough. You're too stupid. You hit your head on the wrestling mat too many times. I get all that, but that's fine. If that's the way my story ends, then so be it. But like, anybody can truly achieve anything. You have to have a positive attitude. You have to be willing to put in the work, and you have to understand that it takes sacrifices. Are you willing to make the sacrifices it takes? That's the $1 million question.
Yeah, I think timing is important. A little bit of luck on timing. My view of a loan officer getting to that level, you probably need to go one of two routes. One is find some sort of channel partner that allows you to scale a model, you know, all of a sudden. And that might be connections, like maybe your neighbors with the owner of Walmart, right? And lenders have been in Walmart and it's never worked. So I'm not saying that that's the answer, but some sort of way that they can scale you. Or it seems to me today, social media, and you have a great YouTube station, and everybody I've ever talked to about YouTube stations are like, it was 20 views a show, and then one day I woke up and it just popped and all of them went, like, so something like that, and then you become the YouTube guru and everybody goes to you. And I'm sure there's other ways, but to me those are the two ways that you can at least do it without, I don't know what the other secret would be. Just there's not enough time in the day, I don't think.
I agree with you 1,000. I mean, here, having Sam Walton as your next door neighbor, or your dad is Sam Walton, that doesn't hurt, for God's sakes. I mean, I'll take that too, you know. But at the end of the day, if you keep pounding the, what are your choices? I have these talks with a lot of my employees and loan officers all the time, especially over the last 3 years, the market's been where it is. I have a lot of these talks just all the time. So I always say to my employees, like when they start asking me, Hesh, like, I don't know about this. I say, well, what's your alternative choice? Tell me what your alternative is. You can get out of the industry. That's one choice. The other choice is you're in the industry. So if you're stuck here doing this, why not make the best of it? If I'm stuck coming into work today, why not make the damn best of it that I can make? Now, I get frustrated. I get angry. I've thrown things. I've thrown a lot of things into walls and stuff like that. I'm not going to say I didn't or I don't. I lose my temper all the time. My goal is perfection, period. It just is. My goal is perfection. Lenny and friends are like, people say, Hesh, you can't be perfect. I get it. Perfection's impossible. I get it. It doesn't mean that cannot be my goal. And that's it. So, I mean, I get angry. I don't hop and skip through the tulips every single day. But I will tell you, I wake up every day. The first three words in my mind every morning I open my eyes is, thank you, God, I'm here. I'm not even religious, but I say, thank you, God. Because I would stay up June 19th. There was another guy in a separate incident Same summer, he died. He bled to death in the parking lot. I lived. I got lucky. I had people there who called the ambulance immediately. Had they not called the ambulance, I'd have been dead. So I thank God I'm alive. I don't wake up and spring out of bed and scream on top of my lungs, thank you, God, I'm here. I just think it in my head. And then I think, thank you, God, thank you. And I'm ready to go. Like, let's go. Like, time to make the most of this day.
Wow. If we can just go back a few more minutes. At what point in the over course of the last few years did you decide to say, okay, this was a bad market. It's going to be a great market. When do you look at expansion now? I mean, if we're looking at a potentially lower interest rate, and with your attitude, there's a lot of stuff that's going on. You can motivate your people. How do you say, I'm going to go into expansion mode, either more marketing, more networking, or purchasing more leads? What do you tell your originators out there to go for expansion, to go big for themselves?
That's a great question. What right now, today, my vision is narrow. My vision is small. I'm in survival mode, period, end of story. I'm not trying to expand right now. I'm not. What almost put me into, I've gone bankrupt almost twice. In December of 2009, I had a 492 credit score. So if I could give you this quick story, in December of 05, I'm a mortgage broker. I own my little brokerage. I've got like 20 employees. My house is paid off. I've got no credit card debt. I've got 600,000 cash in the bank, 200 grand in my 401k. That's December of 05. Fast forward, March of 09. I've got 600,000 in credit card debt. I liquidated my 401k. I ripped out 550,000 from the equity of my house. That was everything I had on my equity. And I had no money in checking savings. The 600 grand cash was gone. Period. Chase Bank calls me. They raised the interest rate on my credit card to 30%, 29, whatever it was. I broke. I made the decision in March of 09, stopped making credit card payments in May of 09. I stopped payments in May of 09 for the first time in my life on my bills. By December of 09, I had a 492 credit score. I was as dead broke as you get. My brothers were like, get out of this garbage job. Quit doing this job. It's ruined you. Quit. That's all people kept telling me is quit doing what you're doing. The reason I got into that position is because I tried to expand in a shrinking market. In 2006, 7, 8, 9, when the market was contracting, I was like, this is when you gain market share. I'm going to go through everything and I'm going to take over everything. And I learned a valuable lesson back then, two valuable lessons. One was, don't try to overcome the market. The market is bigger than you are. I learned I'm smaller than the market is. The second thing was, pay off your debt when you've got money. When I came into a lot of money in 04, 05, because those were the big years at the time, I didn't pay off my debt. I reinvested it into my business. I should have paid off my debt. Fast forward to today. When I made money in 2015, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, I took all that money. I paid off all my debt. I was debt free. And then when the market contracted in the back end of 21, 22, and then into these years, one, I had no debt. The second thing was, my mindset was, I'm staying small. I told my managers all the time for the last 3 years, you guys, we don't have to do nothing. All we got to do is show up and come to work every day and do the actions we know to do. And that's it. So my advice in markets like this is stay small. Stay small, man. You don't have to try to grow right now. It's survival. I'm growing just by existing. We're down to 95,000 loan officers in the United States. That means me individually, I own a larger share of the market without even trying to own a larger share of the market because there's less competition. So 20 years ago, I was like, I don't care. Let's grow. Let's hire. I need 20 people by January 1st. I'll never forget telling my manager the one time back then, I don't care who we hire. We need to fill those seats. I bought these cubicles. I swear, I remember this like it was yesterday. I bought these cubicles, like 20 cubicles. And I was like, we need to put asses in the chair and I don't care who we hire. Just put them in there. Today, I'm like, get the hell out of here. Go read the book by Jim Collins, Good to Great. You got to hire the right people and put the right people in the right seats on the bus. That's it. So now I'm like, hey man, if we don't hire anybody, we don't. So what? I don't have to grow right now. My attitude's completely the opposite. And because of that, that's what has gotten me through this.
That's a fantastic answer. And I think if you're out there, there's never been a better opportunity because it is 3 years of pent up good days ahead. Don't try to time the market and don't underestimate AI. You don't need AI raw in your business. Just look at some of the software out there that has leveraged AI that just allows you to scale. And that's why we have some great sponsors here. We're always looking for sponsors. So if Proficio Bank wants to give us a call or anybody else, but let's take a quick break, hear from some of the sponsors that are helping companies grow. And on the other side, we'll get to hear more about this positive attitude from Cash.
Want to take your business to the next level? As a longtime trusted mortgage service provider, Mortgage Connect works with some of the largest lenders, servicers, and institutional investors, providing cutting-edge solutions for everything from title, closing, escrow, and default, to capital markets and risk solutions. Mortgage Connect brings it all to the table, redefining mortgage lending with innovative digital solutions that can elevate your bottom line.
It's time to use AI to revolutionize the way you do marketing in 2025. With ADM Intelligence, we have access to 5,000 consumer data points and proprietary AI technology that helps you understand who is in your database, what's the likelihood of people to do a real estate transaction, and also who they are. So for example, someone who's 50% likely to transact the next 6 months, who's a first-time homebuyer, should receive very different content than someone who is, let's say, not as likely to transact that already owns a home. And of course, our content team will provide you with all of that turnkey out of the box to market to everyone in your database. So to learn more, come find us at ICE. If you're there, we're booth number 327, or go to our website, thinkadm.com. Love to walk you through a custom demo of how AI can supercharge your marketing this year.
Where the company can do the configurability. So we have no code on this, so they can go in their settings, they can set it up all the way down to the loan officer if they want to. We also have a customer support team that's assigned to each account. If they want, they can overhaul everything if they wanted to. They have a new product, especially dynamic apps. With dynamic apps, we can fit multiple. We can fit the Fannie Freddie loans. We can new construction, one-time close, HELOCs. You know, whatever those workflows are, they can design that workflow for each individual app. So it's not a static app. And plus two is, as they're answering those questions, it'll ask them specifically what they need. So the borrower has everything at their fingertips right then and there. You know, when a question gets answered, certain documents are required. And we have that engine that handles that. So if it uploads directly into Floify, pushes it automatically into the LOS. If the loan officer, they are able to set it up where it looks like if the processor needs something, they can communicate as a team. So it looks like it's coming directly from the loan officer that they're already used to and have that relationship with. So it's not somebody that they never talked to. Now, what's going to take it to the next level is the AI and the OCR piece.
I'm a big quote guy, and I've noticed you already have Tom Breen and a couple others this show. You remind me of Ted Lasso. You have this positive attitude. I think your employees are very lucky to work with you, especially in these times. One of my favorite Ted Lasso scenes is the dart scene where he's throwing the darts and he's quoting how his dad always had the quote, Walt Whitman, be curious, not judgmental, talking about why he was always underestimated because no one ever asked him. They often judged. Can you just talk about how you bring that be curious, not judgmental attitude to your workforce every day and then get them on the phone so that the call reluctance and all that?
I will tell you what, that 20 years ago, I tried to be everything. I was the manager, the owner, payroll. And now when you're small and it's just you and four other people, you have to be everything. But you want to, I'll never forget this, that the first person you need to hire is your manager. Your first hire is your manager. So the mistake I made 20 years ago was that, so in managing people, you need a man. If you're the owner, you've got to hire, and you don't have to own the company. I think we all own our own business. Our business is called us. Our parents gave us our name when we were born. So you could be a branch manager, but there's five people in the branch, the answer to you. Yes, you have the corporate rules, but the answer to you, you're the owner then. So 20 years ago, I'll never forget my one buddy, he is a police officer. And I started hiring more people. And he's like, Hash, you need to hire a manager. And I was like, why would I pay a manager? And I'll never forget this. He was a police officer. He said, you don't need to pay a manager. Just give somebody the job title of manager. Let all these other people go to them. And that person comes to you. He's a police officer. Now he's retiring in 2 years at this point. But when I opened Liberty, I made my processor my manager. It was just her and I. And I literally said to her, you're going to be the manager. I'm going to tell you who we're hiring. They're going to come and interview with you, and I will tell you whether we hire them, but you're not going to tell them it's my decision. We're going to tell them it's your decision. I swear to God. And so that's how it was me and my processor, and her job title was manager. And that's where I manage people the best, is by allowing my managers to manage. Now, if you're watching me say, well, yeah, he has 100 people. I only have 2 people. I hate to tell you this, make one of them the manager, so that the other person goes to that person. And that's how you really scale up big. Because the problem 20 years ago, when I had 20 people working for me, I'm telling you, they used to come to me and say, Hesh, the toilet's clogged. And I'd be like, what the hell do you want me to do? Like, go unclog it. But Hesh, you're the owner. Like, okay. Like, it just is too much. It's too much for one person. People came to me with marital issues, other issues, and this, and this, and this, and this. It's too much for a human being to try to be all things for everybody. And I thought, I cannot afford to pay a manager when I was a small business. If I could go back in time, I'd say, hey, ding dong, you don't have to pay them. Just give them the title. But that's why Good to Great, Jim Collins, the book, which I highly recommend. Your first person in the door needs to be a very important person. Your processor, my processor ended up being my vice president of the company, because she was there when I started the company. Like, she knew the roots of the company. She knew why I was a nut and why I was this and why I was that. Like your first people that you hire in the door are important people, man. And if they're there at ground level, they're going to appreciate it that much more when you grow the business. That's why they deserve, quote unquote, manager positions as the company grows and stuff like that. So how do I manage other people? The truth is, I don't. I let my managers manage.
I have a 2-part question and follow up to your story for yourself there. The first question is, are you a people pleaser? And then the second question, as a follow up to that, is when did you decide I can't save the world?
Those are 2 great questions. Number one, I'm not a people pleaser. I'm the most anti. The problem is, my whole life has been negative reinforcement. So I'm a very big believer in negative reinforcement. Okay. I learned from my first mortgage company that I own, my brokerage, that negative reinforcement in a work environment doesn't have a place. It just doesn't, which is like, it makes me want to puke even saying that, but it just doesn't. But my whole life was, I'm Middle Eastern. My parents are from the Middle East. I'm a first generation American. My dad would always say, I'm going to go to work, and if I come home and the grass isn't cut, I'm going to beat the hell out of you. There was never any physical violence, but the specter of it was there. So it was always like, oh my God, like it was negative. If you don't do this, something bad's going to happen. Then I got the Colin Gresham, for God's sakes, and wrestled for an Olympic gold, 2-time Olympic gold medalist. And it was, if you guys don't do this, I'm going to run you 20 miles on Route 50, Highway 51. So it was, if you don't do this, something bad happens. It's just my DNA. So when I opened my first mortgage company, it was, if you guys don't do this, then I'm going to do that to you. And that's how it was. I learned people don't react good in a working environment to that. So there's no place for that positive reinforcement. The philosophy that I've now hung my hat on, honestly, is our core philosophy as a company is the employee experience. I believe in Richard Branson saying, I don't put the customer first, I put my employee first. And if you put your employee first and take care of them, they will take care of the customer. I've hung my hat on that for the last 11 years of business. I gambled that if I don't worry about my customers and I put my employees first, I'm going to win. And it's worked out dramatically better. And I apologize that I forgot the second part of your question, but that was answering the first part.
The second part was, when did you decide that you can't save the world? You can't please everybody. So when did you make that decision for yourself in business?
In my first round of business with my first mortgage brokerage, when I had 20 employees, like, I was trying to do everything to make them happy. And you asked me if I was a people pleaser, and I would do everything I could. And I'd be like, well, I did everything they asked me to do, and they still, whatever. So that's why I just learned, I can't make everybody happy, piss on it. It's just that simple. I'm going to be the best I could be. I'm going to be me, and I'm going to do the best job I can do. I'm not going to make everybody happy. We serve food. We have a full-time chef here in the building. This building's a 2-story, so I point to the second floor of the building. We have a full-time chef. He was the head chef of the U.S. Olympic team in 2004. He's cooked all over the place. He's an incredible chef. He cooks lunch every day for our employees. It's free. Doesn't cost anything. It is a damn good lunch. We still get people that complained. That'll say that the sauce was too spicy. I mean, if you want to know the truth in my brain, I'm thinking, I got a crazy idea. Don't eat it. Don't eat it. go down. We're on Rockside Road, downtown. We're in the center of Cleveland over here. Like, there's 800 restaurants here. Go pick. You don't need to eat this. I didn't tell you part of your employment agreement was to eat the food. Don't eat it. But I don't do that. I'm just, no problem. I get it. I'll talk to him about it. So I gave that up. You can't please everybody. Can't.
Even you don't have a food manager that they go to instead?
No. We used to have somebody to stock the food, but that was one of the first positions that we got rid of. And that was her job was to see what everybody felt and thought, but we got rid of her first when the market started condensing,
I'm curious how long some of these IMBs have held on and not caught, at least in operations. And I know you keep referencing good to great. So one of the themes in good to great is the flywheel effect, where greatness isn't a single leap. It's the accumulation of small, consistent wins that builds momentum. Some of these companies, it doesn't seem like they have the culture of any small, consistent wins. And so where in a market like this, outside of closed loans, where do you find those small wins?
I truly think the IMBs made so much money that the truth of the matter is money. I always tell people this, money doesn't buy happiness, but whoever invented that saying never had money, because it doesn't make you happy, but man, does it resolve a lot of problems. I could tell you this from personal experience. We've been getting beaten up badly for 36 straight months. I haven't taken a paycheck out of this place in 3 years. Go look my numbers up on MMI. I personally originated around 150 loans a year just over the last 3 years. And I don't have an LOA, an assistant, all this other garbage. I take them start to finish. It's been brutal. But do you want to know how I survived? We made a lot of money and I saved it. 20 years ago, why didn't I survive? I made a lot, yes, but I didn't pay off my debt. And when the market hit and I couldn't take a paycheck, I didn't have enough to pay the bills. So I think the IMBs, I think we just, as a sector of the industry, made so much damn money. And that helped all of us to overcome the storm of the last 3 years. I'm not saying everyone has stayed in business, but I'm willing to bet money a lot did. And that's the truth of the matter. I'm able to absorb a lot more today just because I made more and I saved more. I learned from my past experiences. So the victories for me come in the survival of it. But that's just as an individual loan officer too. I keep telling my LOs that, like, if you guys can make it through this, you're surviving. This is a game of survival right now. Stop. I always tell my employees, stop trying to worry. I tell my managers who want to grow and get pay raises, stop trying to worry about growing. Don't be so, we haven't hired anybody in a year. I think last year I hired, I'm not kidding you, like two people the whole year, two people. And we lost like 25 people. You know, I went from 300 people down to 100 people in 30 months.
I remember you were one of the first to cut, and you cut fast. So, I mean, for all you listeners out there, I was living in it and you are at the front line there.
I appreciate it. I will tell you, the hardest thing in my career of business, it wasn't not paying my credit cards. That was hard. It ruined my credit, whatever. I almost went bankrupt twice, May of 02, March of 09. I didn't go bankrupt, but I almost did. Firing people, it's the typical, when you fire somebody, you don't fire them because they're doing a good job. You get rid of them because they're negative to the business. That hurt. The hardest thing I've ever gone through in business was laying people off. I might almost start crying right now thinking about it. It was May of 2022. And we were going, like, we were profitable in May of 22, but I didn't predict this, for God's sakes, inflation, all this stuff. But I was like, man, this is not, we got to start laying people off right now. Our production's gone down too sharply. It's not coming back soon. We got to lay people off. We laid off 31 people in one day. I spent the whole weekend before crying my eyes out the whole weekend, because it's one thing to go to somebody who's a jerk and say, get out of here. And because we're live on LinkedIn, I'm not using the words I normally use. Like, usually every third word's F. Michael, you know that. So I'm really reining in the beast of just giving my true, how I want to talk. But the person that's a jerk. Yeah, I appreciate it. But like the person that's a jerk, like, I'm like, if you don't get out of here, I'm going to drag you by the head and throw you out of here. You know, whatever it is, that's easy. But to go to somebody who tells you every day, Hesh, you're the best boss I ever had. Like, I'm so thankful that I work for you. And they come in every day and they do everything you ask them to do. And they do it with a great attitude. And you got to go to that person and say, you know what? I know you're doing everything I asked you to do. I know you have a great attitude. You've always been so committed. I got to let you go. And you know, in your mind, like they're not going to go just walk and find another job the next day. They're not going to. That was, I cried my eyes out the whole freaking weekend before that layoff. And we've had more layoffs since. But the problem was, I tried to save everybody 20 years ago. I tried to save everybody. And I almost ran myself into bankruptcy. Not only was everybody out of a job, I almost went bankrupt. So the one thing I would say to myself was, it's either lay off some to save the remaining, or try to save everybody and everybody's out of a job, including yourself. And that's why I made those moves. It was my experience from 20 years ago. I refused to lay anybody off to the point where I was using my credit cards to pay, to do payroll. That's why I had 600 grand in credit card debt and I lost all my savings. I was keeping everybody on my credit cards. And I told my buddy, Tad, we were out in Irvine. I used to go out to California to do seminars out there. I'd stay at his house, 25 Amaret Drive in Irvine. He sold his, and so he wouldn't mind if I said that. But we'd be sitting at his pool. And I'll never forget him saying in 2008, I'll never forget this, Hesh, you got to stop coming out here. You're losing too much money. And I was like, I don't care if I go bankrupt. I'm not letting go. I'm keeping everybody. Yeah, well, the market showed me a lesson or two. So it's you got to let people, it's very sad. I mean, now it's even right now, like I almost start crying, thinking about May of 20, when I let all those people go. And I got that list, by the way. And I promise you, when we grow, there's probably 10 or 15 I'm going straight back to say, hey, man, come, like, let's go. I feel kind of bad because I'm like, man, I hired them before and I let them go. I don't know if they trust me anymore, which hurts by itself because they're really good people. But laying people off is very hard.
Wow. You've given us a lot of great business principles, Ashton. I have one question for you, and then I'm going to let Mike take over here. What does your average day look like for you as a leader, as an originator?
I get up every morning at 3:30 in the morning. I have a workout routine that I do. I have a sauna, cold tub. I do all that. I read. So when I'm sitting in my sauna, I have a Kindle and I read in my sauna. So I read. And then I clear my emails starting at 6 a.m. Now, I'm not married and I have no children, so I should say that too. I'm 52 years old. And I've always had people say, well, Hush, you don't have kids. Bull crap, I've got employees, man. I got 100 employees right now. I'll tell you this one. Employees are worse than children. You want to know why? Because kids, at least they have an excuse. They're kids. They do something stupid. It's, well, he is 13 years old. He's 9 years old. He's 17 years old. But try to figure that one out for a 40-year-old who makes six figures. You know, that's dramatically different. So I don't want to completely say by not having children or something, it gives me the total freedom of anything. But anyways, I clear out my emails and then I come into work and I just sit at my desk and I do my calls. I network with real estate agents. I do my loans. And then I get done at 5. I go work out with my buddy and I return calls like a nut. My phone's glued to me 24/7. I don't know. I went to Vail, Colorado earlier this year. It was awesome. Went for a week and a half. I'm going to Sedona, Arizona in January for a week and a half. I'm going to Oklahoma. The Oklahoma Association of Realtors have me come up to talk at their convention. I'm only talking for 2 hours on a Tuesday, but I'm going out there for 10 days because I'm going to go back to Oklahoma State. I'm going to see my coaches. I stay at my coach's house when I go out there. I'm going to see all my old teammates. I'm going to work out with them. I love it. When I get back out to Oklahoma State and I see my old teammates, we work out, we hand fight and stuff like that. I mean, it's like freaking the good old days. They beat me up back then. They beat the piss out of me now too, but I do the best I can to hold them off. But my buddy Steven's got a really bad knee now. So I think it's a little more even than it used to be. But I don't know. Like people always say, Hesh, you work all the time. I don't work all the time. The truth of the matter is I ebb and flow. Like I'm serious. When I'm off of this call here, I think I might go out. I'm looking out our window right now. I might go do mulch or I might go spray the weeds. Like for the next hour, I might like I ebb and flow. I've learned how to work the right way where like I'm in and out. Like I work for an hour and then I go and just do things that frees up my mind. We decorate our building with decorations, our Halloween decorations. I'm starting to get those out on the second floor. So I do things that relax my mind, like this podcast. I sincerely appreciate the opportunity you guys give me. It's like, but this takes me away from talking to customers about missing contract dates and stuff. So you don't want to work for 10 straight hours. You got to ebb and flow.
Yeah, I go to a lot of conferences and I have to say, Hesh, this is what more of the medicine that people need to hear. And I'm glad that you chose our podcast to spread it out on. And I hope all the listeners are listening and really enjoyed this. And we, as always, want to thank our listeners for joining us
Thank you for joining us on this journey into the heart of mortgage innovation. Remember, every mortgage has a story, and we're here to help you write yours. If you enjoyed today's insights, please subscribe, share with your network, and connect with us on social media. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries and uncovering the stories that drive our industry forward.